Welcome back once again to the first hour of the Young Turks. I'm John Arola, Anna Kasparian, and today we have Michael Shore, long time
in the middle,
gone from the show, in the middle, taking JR's seat, Maz Jobani's seat, and now to Michael Shore.
They were taking my seat.
Exactly, they were keeping it warm for him. We've got so much show. Like, we've stuffed too much show into a normal sized show's content. It reminds me of when I saw a picture of Donald Trump in golf pants. It's like, don't try to put that much in there. But it is a lot of important stuff, and we are going to attempt to get to it.
He might have taken that as a huge compliment, by the way.
Right. He shouldn't.
You saw him from behind, maybe. If you saw him from behind and said it.
You actually reminded me of it when you tweeted out that picture earlier. Yeah. But anyway, we do have a lot of news to get to. Big show. And then in the second hour, I hear from Brett Ehrlich, who's going to be on it, that it's an amazing rundown.
He loves it. He's giddy about it. Yeah.
What's the story you're most excited for in the second hour?
So attractive, successful people in New York talking about how they had to settle for less attractive people for significant others. And that's my favorite story. It has the most outrageous quotes. You don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
And it's from the New York Post, so you know it's a good source.
Exactly. I'm hoping we're going to get to it, but one of the stories I'm most excited for is the FBI's latest attempt to rehab its image, following in a long line of to varying degrees propaganda in TV and movies to prop up the US military intelligence services and all of that. So that's going to be exciting. Hopefully we'll get to it. We're going to be starting off with some news from around the country. Yesterday, US Judge Sheila Abdus-Salam was found in the Hudson River having died. We don't yet know exactly how, but a tragedy regardless. Abdus-Salam is the first black woman to ever serve on New York's highest court. Also, the country's first ever female Muslim judge. She had been reported missing earlier by her husband, and police are now investigating. They say that she was found with no sign of trauma. And so far, a very odd situation, a very mysterious situation, a lot of speculation around it, but police are investigating right now. News coming out of NASA, they have announced today that there's new evidence that leads them to believe that Jupiter's moon Europa and Saturn's moon Enceladus, which are both ocean worlds, might harbor the conditions necessary to have alien life. That would be microscopic, it'd be very small, but they now believe that that might actually exist, which would be amazing, never before seen in the rest of the universe.
And I had the Europa Enceladus for lunch. It was fantastic.
This is exciting. And we should discover alien life as soon as we can, because we're trying to wipe it out here on Earth as fast as possible through climate change and MOABs. Anyway, House Democrats are also pushing for Jared Kushner's security clearance to be suspended after it was revealed last week that he had declined to put in his application for that security clearance, that he had met several dozen times with foreign operatives, including at least two high profile meetings with representatives of the Russian government. Now, these are the same things that led to Mike Flynn having to resign and Jeff Sessions having to recuse himself. And so House Democrats thinking perhaps Jared Kushner should make a nice little set of three there. And then finally, the US military said today that it had intercepted communications between representatives of the Syrian military and chemical weapons experts in the run-up to the sarin gas attack in Idlib province last week. Now, they say that this is the sort of intelligence gathering that they don't monitor in real time, but they're able to go back and look for. They haven't presented the actual evidence. Theoretically, if the UN does investigate, it will then be revealed. But they say that this is further proof that it was the Assad regime that perpetrated the sarin gas attack that killed so many. Anyway, with that, we can move on to the big news story of the day. Today, in an attempt to destroy a network of ISIS tunnels in Afghanistan and also to distract the media from discussing any other topic, the US military dropped the largest non-nuclear bomb in its arsenal. Also known as the mother of all bombs, the GBU-43 is a 21,600-pound GPS-guided munition first tested back in March of 2003 for possible use in Iraq at that point. It never was actually used, and we believe that only about 15 were produced. It was dropped from an MC-130 aircraft in the Achin province, district of Nangarhar province, close to the border with Pakistan. And Sean Spicer announced in a press conference today, "We targeted a system of tunnels and caves that ISIS fighters use to move around freely, making it easier for them to target US military advisors and Afghan forces in the area." He went on to say that the device was a large, powerful, and accurately delivered weapon, which I think is an interesting descriptor to put on a weapon that has a blast radius of 1 mile, that it's accurate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, it's kind of difficult to miss at that point, I'd say, Sean Spicer. But also, just in case Maria Bartiromo was watching, it was unmanned. Thank God. And the United States took all precautions necessary to prevent civilian casualties and collateral damage, or at least to the extent that you can with a weapon that once again has a blast radius of 1 mile.
Right.
Now, this is a relatively uninhabited area, I suppose, but I'm not sure exactly how you avoid civilian casualties with something that large. And we're going to show you sort of a description of what we're talking about here a little bit later on.
And, you know, Spicer went on to say that Hitler never dropped
sunk
a bomb
to this level.
This big, right?
No. He didn't.
So I don't know. I'm not an expert on military weaponry. So this is based on the research that I just did and what I learned about, you know, the different types of bombs, non-nuclear bombs that our military currently has. And so everyone keeps reporting this as the largest non-nuclear bomb in our arsenal.
Yes.
But then it turns out that there's something known as the GBU-57. That's 30,000 pounds. And so
that's the father of all bombs.
That's the father.
Well, that's actually the Russians do have the father of all bombs.
Right.
So I'm not familiar with that. I am a bit of a nerd when it comes to military technology. That might have been tested, but not actually produced, perhaps.
So okay, that might be the case. But I also read that the bomb that they used wouldn't necessarily destroy underground like tunnels and caves.
I mean, it's designed in a way that it can do that.
Mm-hmm.
We have other munitions that are designed for that. So look, that's the official thing that they said. We did it because we want to destroy these tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that's the case. But we're not stupid, and we can speculate about other reasons. I mean, some people are saying it might be strike back because a Green Beret was killed in that district last week, I believe. I guess that's possible. It could be that this is supposed to send a strong signal to either Assad or Putin or North Korea. We don't know for sure. But we do know one thing. This is the exact sort of thing that Donald Trump would do, that he would get into office and he would say, give me your biggest bomb. What do we have? Let's drop it. And then he'll temporarily feel like he's packing something. But then he would brag about it. And he is going to brag about it in the video we're going to show you. But look at how he sort of doesn't take too much credit for it, which I think is interesting. You're going to see that right here.
Very, very proud of the people. Another successful job. We're very, very proud of our military. Just like we're proud of the folks in this room, we are so proud of our military, and it was another successful event.
Did you authorize it, sir?
Everybody knows exactly what happened, so. And what I do is I authorize my military. We have the greatest military in the world, and they've done a job as usual. So we have given them total authorization, and that's what they're doing. And frankly, that's why they've been so successful lately. If you look at what's happened over the last 8 weeks and compare that really to what's happened over the last 8 years, you'll see there's a tremendous difference. And this was another very, very successful mission.
Two quick points on that. One, I'm glad that he thinks that things have been going well over the last 8 weeks. That's fine. He should present some evidence of how that's going. But then he did insult the military's efforts for the past 8 years, saying that we've been so much better. He realized it's the same military that was functioning then. And then also, when given the opportunity to say that he authorized it, he said, I think everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? This is a guy who he takes credit for things that have nothing to do with him.
You know, that's true. And you know, he said, first of all, one thing you have to remember about Donald Trump is he said about ISIS a while ago when he was just Donald Trump, which I sort of think he is still. But he said, we're going to bomb the shit out of ISIS. That's a quote from Donald Trump. And so this is the realization of that. And this is what's happening right now. Another part of this, I mean, Joseph Votel, who's the head of CENTCOM over there, said it to John Nicholson, who's in Afghanistan. This is what we're going to do. We're going to proceed. But this is Donald Trump, and this is Donald Trump. As far as we know, he could have just had a good time last Thursday in Syria and said, here we go again. Now, I'm not saying that that's what happened, but that's the only thing that he can point to as a positive in his administration right now. So why wouldn't he keep doing this?
Well, he could try to.
That's an interesting perspective, especially because the media immediately changed their tune toward Trump as soon as he took some action in Syria, right?
Well, he did become presidential.
He became very presidential. I mean, he acted on emotion and decided
We thought he became presidential. You don't actually become presidential until you drop the mother of all bombs.
Well, that's true.
And that's the thing. This is the sort of, we're Americans. Like in the media, there's only one position you can have on patriotism in the military. You basically all have to agree there. So if we drop the mother of all bombs, then that must be way better than when we drop regular bombs. Chris Wallace said, Trump is now showing a willingness to use force that we haven't seen for 8 years.
Really?
Look, this individual bomb, way more destructive than regular bombs. But does he know that we've dropped hundreds of thousands of bombs? Trump supporters, and I've seen the tweets, they're all enthusiastic, seem to think that rampant bombing isn't a thing we've tried to use against terrorists in the Middle East up until this point. That's all we've used up until this point. Now, this is worse, but it's not fundamentally different. And really fast, I want to show some pictures, because whenever you see, they're going to show a million tests of the Moab from back in 2003. You're going to see it blowing up in the desert, and you think, yeah, that'll kill some terrorists. And as of right now, Trump can't suddenly begin using these willy-nilly. We have 15. We could produce more, but we've got 15. But this could be a test by either Trump or the military to see, is this something that the American people will accept being used on a wider basis? And they want you to think of desert huts being blown up. But this is a massive weapon. And so for scale, I want you to see what this actually does. How many people could be killed by this? So we're gonna show you to scale. Let's bring this up. Here's what would happen in LA if you were to drop this bomb in downtown. That the central circles is the destruction of even hardened structures. Nothing survives that, like a nuclear blast. The bigger middle one destroys skyscrapers, all of that, just wipes everything out too.
But the people dining at Bestia down there, they're fine.
Yeah, they're probably fine in Bestia. No, it actually extends beyond that, but it doesn't do as much damage.
Right.
Jesus is fine, the Dodgers are good.
That would kill tens of thousands of people at the very least. Let's go to the next one. You'll see it in New York. I would have put it a little bit higher up, but unfortunately the tool was broken when I tried to generate my own today. Wiping out millions of people potentially. We go ahead to London, because of course we're never gonna talk about what if these weapons were to be used. You can go on the next one. What if these weapons were to be used against us? What precedent are we setting that we now believe we can use these weapons? If someone else does, and we're not the only one who has these, Russia has weapons like this, can we say these weapons are truly unacceptable when we choose to use them?
I think one of the biggest issues is that there's been so much fear mongering in the media, and there's so much love for military action and bombing the bad guys that I think that not most Americans, but a sizable chunk of Americans will see this type of action and applaud it. There were people, this is anecdotal, but there were people on my feed on social media today who aren't necessarily very interested in politics. They're just kind of casual consumers of political news. And so they kind of know what's going on. And then they read the headlines about Trump, you know, sanctioning what just happened today. And they see it as a sign of strength, because they see the headlines indicating that he used a bomb against ISIS. And so they think, okay, he's taking some strong action against ISIS. He's actually doing something. That's a strong president. One of my friends used that statement, strong president. And so they're not, look, people who think that way aren't bad people. We've been conditioned by the media to think that way. And so people aren't gonna visualize the destruction the way that you just made our audience visualize it, right? Mm-hmm. The fear is very apparent right now. We've been told over and over again that, you know, Islamic terrorism, ISIS specifically, poses an imminent threat to Americans. People are scared, understandably so. But you have to really think about whether or not this type of force and this type of foreign policy actually does keep us safer in the future. And, you know, it depends. If this is really a remote area, you're not killing a bunch of civilians, and it does successfully destroy tunnels that ISIS is using, then I'm all for it, right? But right now, we don't know what the impact of this bomb has been, if it even achieved what they said that it was going to achieve.
They said it was successful. And do they know?
They don't know. And you don't know about success, because when you're fighting a foe like ISIS, even if you wiped out every single person, that's all you did who that it was intended for, all it takes is one person to drive a truck into a building in Buenos Aires, and they wake up again. And then the whole world is afraid again. So this is not typical. Two other points I want to make very quickly. He did Syria last Thursday. He did this today. The Congress is on vacation. There's nobody in Congress right now. They're on their recess for Easter. It's very easy, or it's easier to do these things when Congress is on recess. You don't have to answer. But after the bombing over the weekend last week when in Syria, he started to get a lot of flack. The administration started to get a lot of flack about how ill-advised it may have been to do that, how we didn't know the results. Some people were saying we don't even know about the chemical weapons and who's responsible for that. But that's something to remember. The next thing is, when you brought this up, but becoming presidential, right? The person that you cited who said, well, now he's being a strong president. Jimmy Carter, mm-hmm. right, who is looked at as kind of a weak president historically mm-hmm. by the people who spin that stuff. Not one American lost their life. One American soldier in combat lost their life in the 4 years that he was president, right?
That's
there were,
right.
There were eight people who went in to try and rescue hostages, which was not combat, and the helicopters crashed. Why isn't that presidential?
Why isn't that strong?
Why is it presidential yeah. only to cause destruction? He became president. He was president. He's a strong president. No, Jimmy Carter was a stronger president yeah. than Donald
right.
Trump.
Right. Well, we've bought into like this Machiavellian, you know, image of what a leader should be, right? Yeah. And so for a lot of Americans, and again, I don't think that this is something that Americans just feel on their own. I think that it's decades of conditioning by the mass media, which makes people think like you need to be strong by being forceful and violent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Diplomacy is always something that takes a back seat.
Yeah. Yeah, and look. It's strength. We don't really care about intelligence. We never really have culturally in America, and certainly not when it comes to the president. But our viewers understand this formula. You drop a bomb, you destroy a building maybe you destroy a human. But what do you create? You guys have seen this for more than a decade now. You create other terrorists. And if a bomb this big can create a couple terrorists, what does a 21,600-pound bomb create?
That's a good
Probably
point.
A hell of a lot more terrorists. And you brought up a point about the two actions he's taken so far. So Trump gets a lot of credit or whatever for being unpredictable. And in some ways he is, but in some ways he's not. When it comes to praise, positive and negative reinforcement, he's very, very predictable. And so he launches a couple of 59 cruise missiles in Syria. Democrats and Republicans largely applaud him. Some of his supporters don't like it. He drops this bigger bomb on ISIS. Everybody seems to love it. It makes us all feel patriotic. So what does he do next week when he's already used the largest non-nuclear warhead we have? A guy who's previously said he doesn't understand why we don't get to use nuclear weapons in war. I know I'm the hysterical one who's worried about that, but he's previously said it. People who've been in meetings with him have said they've had to try to convince him that that's crazy, and he hasn't seemed convinced by it. I'm worried about what this praise is going to do to a crazy person like Donald Trump.
Well, in this case, I don't know if this is going to soothe you at all. But in this case, he at least he collaborated with members of the military who know what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? And so that made me feel a little better about it. It wasn't something a decision that he made unilaterally. It seemed like he yeah. was more willing to actually listen to experts about whether or not this is a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I would hope that those same experts would be against using a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
And they would understand the ramifications of
that.
They
would, but again, we went through the actual process of how you launch a nuclear weapon, and there is nothing that stops him right. theoretically from doing it.
Right.
And it doesn't require generals right. to sign on to it.
It's always collaborative too. I mean, he can't just do it without them, and he's their commander in chief. So there's always going to be yeah. sign off unless there's rebellion or a coup, and there's not going to be. And yeah. so, because you surround yourself with people in the military who are like minded, certainly the civilian military,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
and that's so. I think that this is. I think John's point though is strong, because this is why, you know, you talk about people being unfit for the job. You know,
right?
The
I mean, I don't
use tools like
job.
This.
Yeah.
I don't see Trump as a rational actor, and that yeah. that does worry
it's
me.
Scary.
Yeah. And
yeah.
The only hope that I have is that we have someone kind of checking, you know, his craziness a little bit.
Maybe. Well, why don't we turn to another a possible conflict? Tensions with North Korea are incredibly high right now, and considering the situation and the words that are flying back and forth, the ships that are being moved into the region, it's going to take an incredibly savvy and intelligent leader to navigate this tricky situation. Unfortunately, we're stuck with Donald Trump. And so let's see what his position on North Korea is. He recently met with the Chinese president and revealed this about his discussion concerning what should be done with North Korea. After listening for 10 minutes, I realized it's not so easy. I felt pretty strongly that they had a tremendous power over North Korea, but it's not what you would think. No, it's not what you would think, Donald Trump, because you're the only person involved in this conversation right now who hasn't read something about North Korea and its relationship with China, China's attempts to rein it in, how China's influence and power over North Korea has waxed and waned over the decades. He didn't even wiki North Korea in the lead up to his meeting with the Chinese president. And the Chinese president, like with a child, had to sit down and explain. And I ask you this, that was a 10-minute conversation. How long into that do you think he was still paying attention?
I mean, I don't know, but if 10 minutes was enough to convince him that this is not a simple, clear-cut issue, then fine.
Then we're screwed.
I mean, I feel like anyone who pays any attention to the news is aware of the relationship that China has with North Korea, and maybe not the nuances of that, but at least the reasoning for why China continues to support North Korea, whether or not you agree with it. There are reasons for it. And so I'm gonna answer that phone right now.
Okay, don't worry. No, we're good.
All right.
We're good.
So anyway, so I think most people know, hey, you know what, I think most people know that there's an economic component to it. If you just understand very simplistic theories pertaining to foreign policy, you understand why it's going on.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you have to have some level of intellectual curiosity about this issue or about foreign policy.
Yeah.
You would hope that the president has that type of intellectual curiosity, but it doesn't seem like that's the case, and that's what worries me. Same thing happened with healthcare. He thinks everything's black and white. Healthcare good, Obamacare bad. We want good healthcare. Let's go with good healthcare.
Yeah.
But that's not how the world works.
But also getting your information from China about North Korea.
That's such a good point.
That's not where you go to get it. Right?
Yeah, you're hating on China before, but now all of a sudden you trust the leader of China to give you the correct information about what's going on.
They had cake together. You can't trust that guy?
It was a big, beautiful cake.
Huge cake. Yeah. It was big and beautiful. That's true.
Yeah, although now I have to worry if it was actually stored at the right temperature. We'll get into that in the second hour. I have to say that I feel personally lied to because I've always been the person who's willing to give him a chance and to be fair to Donald Trump. And he said back during the campaign that, okay, maybe he doesn't know the specifics of foreign policy now, but by election day, he'd know so much it'd make your head spin. He lied to me. He didn't actually do the research. So I think I might not vote for him again. Unfortunately.
Yeah,
but look, this is an incredibly dangerous situation, and it's not just a dangerous situation for us here in the US. Obviously, there are huge ramifications for us, especially here in LA, when it comes to missile technology being developed by North Korea. But the people who, if a conflict took off, would bear the brunt of it would not necessarily be us, to some extent Japan, but it would be largely South Korea that could suffer in a way that we haven't seen in decades and decades on this planet. And for him to go into this situation, to start threatening North Korea before he understands what can possibly be done in regards to it, that's not just dangerous. That's suicidal. That's a lunatic's behavior. And unfortunately, he's doing that as like the fourth most important issue to him right now. Like, he's also dealing with Syria. Maybe he still wants to do healthcare. Possible nuclear war with North Korea
taxes.
Is like a third or fourth issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good situation for us to be in. Anyway, with that, we should probably take our first break. When we come back, we're going to turn back to domestic policy. Apparently, the healthcare debate isn't totally over. And look at the lengths Trump is willing to go to get what he wants there. It's scary, and we're going to break it down when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. John and Anna and Michael.
And my son, who called in
exactly.
In the earlier segment.
Well, actually, just Ray here predicted Cenk is calling. He can't help but want to chime in. At some point, he will ask us to hold the phone to our mic.
Right. Yeah.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But
some updates. Expensive call from Vancouver, that's why.
That's true. So some updates for you. There will be a post-game live after the Young Turks. I believe that's going to be Anna and Ida and Brett are going to be talking to you. Know about what yet?
Not yet.
I'll figure it out, but it's going to be awesome. And then tonight after the show, Nomiki is going to be the guest on Aggressive Progressive talking about the latest having to do with Governor Cuomo. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm also supposed to tell you about some podcast changes. TYT Old School now has its own podcast feed. Thank God. I guess that's a big deal. I don't know. And TYT Interviews is back and will feature all new interviews from here on out. You can access that through TYTnetwork.com, member content, podcasting. But you'll only get that far if you are actually a member. But there's still time. So you can go do that if you want to watch any of those.
When is the deadline?
You have 30 minutes or I'll blow this goddamn thing up. And then let's see. We had a couple more tweets from you guys about the stories we were talking about. El Duende Chingon says,
right.
Next time Donald Trump wants to drop a big ass bomb, he should ride it through to its destination. That ain't right, but nice reference. Let's see, Flora Cita said this, and it's a good point because I actually wanted to mention this. About 1 million people live in the region. Don't know if there were civilian casualties, but long-term effects, that's true actually. one of my friends from when I lived in Egypt, actually her family is from there, and so they're extremely concerned. It does seem like it was in an area that's not particularly inhabited, but who the hell knows? I doubt that we do necessarily. And
they said it was for a network of caves.
A network of caves and tunnels, Annie says, Trump only cares about his businesses and chocolate cake, so who's controlling the situation and what's their agenda? Take a guess.
Well, in hour two, we will be talking about Mar-a-Lago a little bit and some of the health code violations that are guilty of. So you want to definitely stick around for that story. Yeah. I love it. It's fun.
Chocolate cake, but no Meals on Wheels.
No Meals on Wheels. Maybe if we, maybe if they delivered Trump-branded chocolate cake and steaks, maybe. Yeah. And in terms of that agenda, those bombs cost, when they were made, more than $15 million, let alone the maintenance for the past decade and a half and moving and all that stuff. So theoretically, if there was a big contract to build a couple hundred more, that's big money right there. But we'll see. That's just speculation.
And a lot of jobs, John, a lot of jobs.
The big job maker in the bombs industry. Okay, let's turn back to what's going on in the US. Donald Trump still wants to pass a new healthcare bill, and to do that, he is willing to throw literally millions of the poorest Americans under the bus, intentionally sabotaging the Affordable Care Act. And the way that he's going to do that is by refusing to pay billions of dollars in cost-reducing subsidies, which would, of course, have terrible effects on those people who need those subsidies to be able to maintain their health insurance. And it would actually have ripple effects that could destroy the entire thing. So he said this recently in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. Obamacare is dead next month if it doesn't get that money. I haven't made my viewpoint clear yet. I don't want people to get hurt. What I think should happen and will happen is the Democrats will start calling me and negotiating. So let's not pretend that something else is happening here than what is really happening. He is holding millions of Americans hostage to get what he wants in terms of healthcare. He says that it's not going to immediately die if he doesn't give them the money, but it could eventually cause a number of insurers to back out of the marketplace. That's what a lot of the experts think will happen. And he understands what sort of people will be hurt by that. It's not his buddies in Manhattan. It's the poorest Americans who desperately need those subsidies. And he says, well, I don't want anyone to get hurt, but maybe I just have to blow up the whole thing. Maybe that gets the Democrats to come. And understand that if the Democrats don't negotiate with him and he does destroy the whole thing, it's not just 7 million Americans who lose their health insurance. It's more than 30 million Americans who could be thrown off health insurance, killing tens of thousands of people every single year.
This is going to be if he does go through with it, a stupid political maneuver, because he thinks that if Democrats are unwilling to negotiate with him and all these people lose the subsidy and their premiums go up, then people are going to blame the Democrats. No, they're not.
We've got polling data for that, actually.
Oh, you do? Okay, perfect. But yeah, look.
It's short-sighted at the best.
People know what your healthcare plan is. They didn't like it, which is the reason why it didn't, you know, go through. So what makes you think that everyone is going to like turn around and be like, oh, Trump's great. Why didn't the Democrats negotiate? They don't want Democrats to negotiate with him. In fact, the biggest issue for Democrats right now is that they negotiate too much, right? Mm-hmm. And so people want Democrats to finally be a little stronger and actually represent their constituents. This is not going to work out well for him, and hopefully he doesn't attempt it.
And the plan that he would be negotiating from is worse than what was already rejected by the Congress and that the Democrats have no standing with. And first of all, it's not as well articulated, but it is, you know, it's far more regressive than the other.
It takes away the coverage for pre-existing conditions and a couple of other things. So it's a bill that even Republicans hated. Mm-hmm. Now you've taken out like the two most popular parts of the Affordable Care Act. And he's like, oh, now do you like it? No, I still hate it. It's still dog crap. I don't want it.
Yeah.
But he thinks that will work. I want to break down some of the numbers, though. And just in case you think, well, Donald Trump, you can't take him too literally. He's just spouting off at the mouth, which unfortunately is a reality we have to accept with our president these days. A White House official was asked for comment on this and said, POTUS wants to use the subsidies as leverage. When Obamacare fails on its own, the Dems will want to come to the table. Again, it won't be failing on its own if you take away billions of dollars, but they're going to find that out. I don't think Trump really wants to cut the subsidies because he'd get blamed for people losing insurance. But right now, it might be his biggest way to force people to do something. It might be the biggest, but it also appears to be the stupidest. But when has that stopped Donald Trump? And finally, those subsidies total $7 billion last year, lowering costs for an estimated 7 million people, effectively reducing their healthcare costs by $1,000. Now, if they took away that money, then theoretically, the health insurance companies would then have to make it up themselves. And if they realize that they can't make the profit that they were before, they might well leave the marketplace. And that is the ripple effect that could lead to taking down the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you need those people and their money to keep the whole system
exactly
working.
Exactly, that is the thing. It's the insurance market and really sort of ham-handing that insurance market, which is, as John said, the most important part of this because it has to be fluid. It has to keep going in order for anybody to have coverage.
Right.
And if you hamstring it like that, you know, the other thing that he misunderstands is that the Republican Congress, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, John. Republican Congress is in competition with Donald Trump, too.
Right.
It's not like they're
right.
in his pocket and they're together on this. So, and the longer this goes, the more blood they're going to smell in the water on this president. And they're going to try and get the advantage over the Democrats and the president.
For someone like Trump, this isn't about pushing for healthcare policy that Americans like or want and are in favor of. It's about winning.
Yeah.
For him, this is about winning. The reason why he failed in, you know, even getting a vote on his proposal is because people didn't want it, right? People hated it. They didn't have enough members of Congress to vote in favor of it. And so it's not about giving you what you want as an American and representing you. It's about making sure that he wins and he looks good. That's all this is about. Just listen to Americans and what they're concerned about. Listen to all those town halls where people got so passionate. I mean, Americans have been historically complacent when it comes to issues like this,
yeah.
right? And for the first time in a very, very long time, they're passionate enough to go to town halls. Town
yeah.
halls? 5 years ago, if you asked me, oh my God, in 5 years, can you imagine Americans getting so fired up about something that they go to town halls? And it would make news headlines? I'd
We've
say
got one
no.
for you today.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and
Anna,
can I just add one thing to Anna? I'm sorry. One thing that you're forgetting mm-hmm. is Obama. The mm-hmm. word Obama in front of it. He wants to beat Obama all the time.
That's,
he's
yes.
just consumed by it. Sorry,
and John. He might be willing to shoot his own foot off to do it. So you pointed out he just wants to succeed. He wants to win. Okay, so if he does what he says he's going to do and cuts these subsidies, will he actually win? Let's jump ahead to graphic 8. And you're going to see a little infographic Vox did of some recent polling data about this. Who would they blame if Obamacare fell apart? Well, 61% of the country already pre-messaging says that President Trump and Republicans in Congress are in charge, and so it's their problem, which seems fair. 31%, to be fair, would blame Obama and Democrats in Congress, willing to bet many of them Trump supporters. 7% aren't sure. Maybe think about it a little bit because your health insurance could be on the line right now. Anyway, let's push forward to another story that's developing right now. Carter Page is a former advisor to Donald Trump in foreign affairs and those sorts of issues. And he's back in the news right now following revelations about the FBI's ongoing investigation into his activities. And now there's actually a new wrinkle to the story. But first, why are we talking about Carter Page again? Well, the Washington Post reported this week that the FBI obtained a warrant to monitor Page's communications back last summer over suspicions that he was acting as an agent of a foreign power. That statement actually downplays it a little bit. They submitted like this much documentation showing not just that he was acting as an agent, but that he was knowingly acting as an agent of foreign intelligence operatives. And so what he was getting up to at that point and afterward, who he was dealing with, what he was saying, incredibly important at this point. And now we're finding out a little bit more about it. So he was on with Jake Tapper, and he's been with other people in the news now, apparently trying to get his message straight in the media about what he discussed and what he didn't. And the possibility of dropping the sanctions against Russia came up. And he had some conflicting things to say about whether that came up in his conversations with foreign officials. You'll see in this video.
In any of these conversations with Russians, either in Russia or back here in the United States, did you ever suggest to any of them that President Trump, a candidate Trump, would be open to easing sanctions on Russia?
Absolutely not.
Never, not once?
I never offered that. No, nothing along those lines. Absolutely not. I mean, it may topics. I don't remember. We'll see what comes out in this FISA transcript. It's
well,
nice.
Well, you know
that,
what you did.
Well, I don't recall every single word that I ever said, but I would never make any offer or intimate anything.
Have you ever conveyed to anyone in Russia that you think President Trump might have been more willing to get rid of the sanctions that were imposed against Russia after they invaded and seized Crimea?
Never any direct conversation such as that. I mean, look, it's
What do you mean direct conversation? What I don't know what that means, direct conversation.
Well, I'm just saying, no, that was never said, no. That
but it sounds like from what you're saying, it's possible that you may have discussed the easing of sanctions.
Something may have come up in a conversation. I have no recollection, and there is nothing specifically that I would have done that would have given people that impression, George.
But you can't say without equivocation that you didn't discuss the easing of sanctions.
Someone may have brought it up. I have no recollection. And if it was not something I was offering or someone was asking for.
You never said that to anybody that you think that if Donald Trump won, he might be willing to get rid of the sanctions against Russia.
No.
And any conversations about those emails that were stolen from the DNC, from the Clinton campaign, any conversations about that?
Not a word.
Not once?
Not once.
Absolutely positive?
Absolutely sure.
One of the matters the FBI is investigating, as you know, is whether any advisor to the Trump campaign at any point discussed the release of the hacked and fished and stolen documents from the DNC and from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. Did you ever discuss any of those documents?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Did you ever
discuss? No advance warning. Yeah, I mean, people may have mentioned it after it came out, but or alluded to some of the findings, but no direct discussions. Absolutely not.
So how can you be sure you didn't talk about that, but you're not sure you didn't talk about easing of sanctions?
Well, that is, I mean, that didn't happen until a couple of weeks later, I believe, during the DNC.
Well, I mean, it was a couple of weeks later. If you're talking about a year ago, you can remember something if it was a couple of weeks later than a year ago. But if it was a couple of weeks and a year ago, I mean, who remembers that? And what I love Jake Tapper's interview technique right there is just ask him a question, let him begin talking, and just don't say anything. So he has to awkwardly fill the gap. And Carter Page, whatever else he does, and I would do the same thing. He can't hide when he's obviously trying, best case scenario, to speak very carefully because he knows that this is going to end up in a trial. And worst case scenario, he's lying to you. He says, absolutely not. Well, I don't want to say I don't recollect. I mean, it could have possibly happened. By the way, if something didn't happen, you say that it didn't happen. If you start saying I don't recollect, you are only allowed in reality to say that if you're lying. That's how recollection works.
And Tapper's question of I don't really understand what you mean by directly.
Yeah, it's like that. It's yeah, so look, it was a long time ago. It's okay to not remember necessarily, but it was his stammering and trying to come up with some way that he can say that he didn't say it, but also if it turns out that he did and the FBI maybe has a transcript or something like that, he can say, well, I said that I didn't recollect. I said not directly. I said I didn't offer it. That's very different than we didn't discuss it or it wasn't a possibility. It's such careful language wielded so uncarefully.
Also, he remembers.
Yeah. I just wish that we finally had something like a bombshell in regard to Russia. Cause like this slow nonstop drip of Russia news is even fatiguing me. And I'm not one of these people who thinks, oh, this is like fear mongering, McCarthyism, blah, blah. No, I think that there might be something there. But I find it so hard to believe that we still don't have like some solid, I don't know, reporting, evidence, whatever you want to call it, for
well,
what's been going on.
Well, we don't
on.
Have access to the raw intelligence, but that doesn't mean that there isn't raw intelligence, so that others haven't gotten access to it. So when politicians have gone in and been briefed on the information that's not privy to us, some of them have come out and said, no, there's something going on. Bernie Sanders is one of those.
Right.
He seems fairly convinced based on the information he's had access to. And look, the FBI said they don't just have communication between Carter Page and Russian operatives. They said, we have evidence that he knowingly functioned as an operative for them. The British came out, we're not even doing this as a full story. I know people love to say that we're hysterical, we cover every aspect of this. We weren't even gonna cover this. But the British intelligence agency said that back in 2015, they started noticing suspicious communication and alerted intelligence agencies in the US to it. The idea that the British intelligence back in 2015, before there'd been a single primary or any of that, we're trying to protect Hillary Clinton after her loss. It's nonsense. I mean, this is a pattern of incredibly bizarre behavior. And yes, we're still waiting to find out the raw information. But it was convincing to the Brits over 2 years ago.
Right. And also, I mean, related is Paul Manafort and, you know, the reporting that we did about him. And by the way, he just registered as a foreign agent.
Right. We don't know exactly of which country for some reason. Right. It could be Turkey or it could be the Ukraine or something
Costa
like that.
Costa Rica.
Right.
It could be. Well, I mean, he previously worked for Turkey at least. Like, it's a possibility.
That's true. It could be. Yeah, yeah. The other thing is, it's being, you know, there are people reporting on this. There are people who are the reporters that are digging on this constantly. It hasn't been reported yet, but they are working their asses off to get this done. You know, from the beginning, I always thought this was going to be a 9 to 15 month endeavor to try and get to the bottom of this. I still think that way. But I think the more doubt that's created and goes back to what we were talking about before with Republicans and Trump, nothing's going to matter until Republicans start leaving the reservation. I think that's going to happen in due time, the more this stuff happens.
Yeah. I have one other video I want to play for you because it's even more bizarre because of how benign the subject matter is. So look, Carter Page is a guy who, when you try to ask him a question, responds in a very bizarre fashion. I understand that you want to be careful, especially if you're being investigated by the FBI. But even when he's asked something super benign, where there's no possibility that we know of any illegal action being taken, look at how he responds to questions like, who brought him on to the Trump campaign in the first place?
Who brought you into the Trump campaign?
You know, Jake, even if you look on many, many shows on CNN, they always have these line diagrams with various faces of people who've supported the Trump campaign over time and various wire diagrams back to President Putin. I mean, and very often it's, you know, based on these false reports. I don't want to mention any names because that's just going to add one other senseless dot on that diagram.
But Carter, I mean, you want to clear things up. There's nothing wrong about bringing a Russia expert onto a campaign. I'm just asking you, who brought you into the campaign? Was it Paul Manafort?
It was not Paul Manafort. I've never met Paul Manafort. I've never spoken with him. And again, I'm just out of respect to their privacy. If I told you a name, Jake, there would be dozens of phone calls on that individual's phone within the next 10 minutes.
Was it Sam Clovis?
Was
it Sam Clovis?
I have no comment. I have no comment.
Well, I mean, I know you want to get out all this information, but then you refuse to answer
but
questions. There's nothing wrong with somebody bringing you into the campaign. I'm just trying to find out who it was.
It's an irrelevant point. He was not the first person that brought me in. I can assure you that.
Well, at least we know it was a man.
I love that last little point.
It's so good.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is he asks, who brought you on? And Carter Page starts talking about Vladimir Putin for some reason. If there's any way that the person bringing him on could be traced to some sort of illegal behavior, I don't understand the possible connection. It's simple. It's like, John, who brought you on to the Young Turks? Oh, thankfully Anna gave me this job in the Young Turks. I can just say that because I'm not a weirdo like Carter Page. Why would you have to hide this? People join campaigns. There's hundreds of people on every political campaign. It's not illegal to bring someone in. Why would you act so bizarrely about it?
Also, I don't understand making any media appearance where you refuse to answer questions. What a waste of time, right? If anything, usually people will agree to media appearances because they think that it would be good for them, their image, their PR, whatever it is. That made him look terrible. He looked like he was lying the entire way through. And then even when he was asked a benign question, which might have helped him in some way, he refused to answer that. So that was a complete and utter PR disaster for him if his whole point was appearing on the show to help his image.
And when you say something is irrelevant, it immediately becomes relevant.
It becomes extremely irrelevant.
Why is it so irrelevant?
In fact, you think it's super relevant, which is why you refuse to answer the question.
And the thing is, it's going to come out anyway. We already have a lead, actually. It came out today. Chuck Ross of the Daily Caller is reporting that multiple sources have told him that the Trump staffer who brought him on is Corey Lewandowski, who introduced Page to campaign policy director Sam Clovis sometime in late 2015 or early 2016. Now, Corey Lewandowski is a D-bag. But it's not illegal to have been involved with Corey Lewandowski.
Or is
it? We don't know for sure that it was even him. But if it was, you're making this so much bigger than it needs to be, Carter Page, and you already have enough problems, trust me. Anyway, with that, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, Anna was talking about those the furious audiences at town halls. We've got another one, and it has to do with who politicians are actually representing when they're in office. We'll discuss that when we come back from this break. Welcome back to what's left of the first hour of the Young Turks with myself and Anna and Michael. We only have a few more minutes and we do want to get to this one last story, so I'm going to jump right into it. If I can. Combative town halls across America are not a thing of the past. They're still going on, and congressmen are still getting in trouble thanks to their interactions with their constituents. In this video, we're going to show you Republican Mark Wayne Mullen, who Michael says is a former MMA fighter.
That's
he brings
correct.
That same fighting attitude to talking to the people who are his constituents. He might end up regretting it. This has to do with who he's actually in office to represent. Let's take a look.
One, you said you paid for me to do this. Bull crap, I paid for myself. I paid enough taxes before I ever got there and continue to my company to pay my own salary. This is a service. No one here pays me to go. I do it as an honor, as a service.
But that salary,
guys, I'm just saying. Don't. This is a service for me, not a career. And I thank God this isn't how I make a living.
Please. Give up your $158,000 then.
Hey, I have before. I've actually paid it back.
Every year would be great.
But here's.
Wow. So the funny thing is, there he is saying, you say you pay my salary. You don't pay my salary. I pay my own salary. And that might sound like maybe he just, you know, he was on vertigo medicine or something. But we have another video. This is apparently a running thing for him. So take a look at this on who pays his health insurance.
Let me just put it out there. First of all, you don't pay for my health insurance. You never have paid for my health insurance. I pay for myself.
Who and pays your salary?
Me. I have self-employed, and I've been self-employed, and I pay more insurance or more taxes inside my own company and personally than I'll ever receive from being in Congress. I pay my own, okay. And I pay my own insurance.
Okay, first of all, I mean, way to go in showing your constituents that you don't care about them and you don't care to represent them or listen to their, you know, concerns. But aside from that, and this is a broader point about people who make similar statements like that. Okay, I get it. We all pay taxes, okay? I can't stand the people who think that they're God because they pay taxes.
Yeah.
Like they think that they're better, that everyone pays taxes except for the extremely poor who literally can't afford it.
Or the extremely rich who avoid it.
Right, or the extremely rich who, exactly, great point.
Or okay? The presidents.
And even the poor pay taxes. Maybe it's not, you know, federal income tax, but they certainly pay taxes in other forms.
Yeah, sales tax,
exactly.
And payroll tax.
So
and all
like,
that.
you're not a hero, dude, okay? You pay your taxes. It's probably a minuscule amount of money in relation to, you know, the amount of deductions that you have, the amount of taxes that you're able to get out of. They pay a tiny amount of taxes. An even smaller amount goes toward helping the poor, and they think that they are God's gift to humanity.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. And by the way, like you can be frustrated if somebody says, "Hey, I pay your salary." I'm sure cops don't like that when on TV shows
but
from the 80s people would say that to them. I'm sure they don't like it. That's fine. You don't have to like it, but in two different interactions with your constituents, that's how you express it. He said, "This is a service, it's not a career, and thank God it's not." Well, with this attitude, it's not going to be your career for that much longer. Say to them, "You know what? We can disagree about exactly how much I've taken out and paid into the system, but what's important to me is that I did come to DC to represent you."
Yeah.
And while we might disagree, I take seriously your concerns. I'm not even a goddamn politician. This is easy. This is politicians 101.
But he says, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have to make this point real quick. He says it's a service. It's okay. Is punching someone in the face a service? Like that's the equivalent.
Well, that was his
right?
former career, actually, as
right.
an MMA fighter.
But it's so stupid. Like I'm providing a service by giving you the middle finger when you voice your concerns.
Right. Yeah. What he's saying basically is that I forget the money. I'm a public servant, and I'm not going to do this for my career. I wouldn't want to do this for my career. But he's going to run for re-election. He ran for re-election already, and he's in Tulsa, which is in that second district of Oklahoma. It's been kind of a yellow dog type of district that you might have a Democrat could do well
really?
There. So, but that's in the old days. Actually, it's Oklahoma. Forget it. It's the most Republican state in the country. But it is around Tulsa. But the point that Anna's saying is true. So, and you are saying it as well. How do you go into a room full of people and don't even bring it up?
Yeah.
Don't say that, right?
Don't,
just hear
message.
What they have to say. It's a town hall.
Yeah.
And you know, you are getting health care through the government.
Mm-hmm.
Even if
yeah.
you have a plumbing business, and it's a successful plumbing business, which he does. Even if you name is Mark Wayne and it's one word and not two
that's
for some reason.
Bizarre.
Right.
Yeah.
You worry about that from the get-go. But you just don't bring it up. That's
exactly.
bad politics.
Don't bring it up. Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, I'm briefly realizing that Mark Wayne Mullen is a human being. In 20 minutes, I'm going to have forgotten him. I don't care about him specifically, but these town halls aren't going away. Thank God they're not going away. People, whether it's in terms of who pays his salary or any other interaction they've had, Joe Barton yelling you lie at him, they're holding politicians accountable on the right and on the left. And thank God, we've been waiting for this for a long time. It could go poorly, I guess, theoretically. But this is what we need right now. People have been, as Anna said, too apathetic. Thankfully, they're finally getting involved. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour. Thanks, Anna, and also Michael for joining me in this first hour. When we come back, we're going to have Aida and Brett. Little break coming up. Keep tweeting us at you, tweeting at us, and we'll see you after this.